The show features cinema-related interviews, movie reviews, theater listings, soundtracks, and tons of great music. We're always looking for contributors of all kinds, so stop by or call 519-837-2378 during the show or email silverscreen@cfru.ca and come and join the Silver Screen Dream Machine team.
You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Right. Money is not our God. Ready?
Money, 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 money's gonna cost.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I'm Siegfried, and that was Killing Joke, Money Is Not Our God. And that song definitely applies to, frankly, a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about here today on the show. If you remember from last week, I started talking about the book that I had been writing for about 13 years, which I just finished just a month ago, entitled Proletarian God, Building the Socialist Future. And I explained a little bit about what I meant by proletarian God and some of the key concepts I guess I talk about in the book. I'm going to do a bit more of that today. I talked about, say, about the first three chapters. It seems like we're going to talk, you know, we're in kind of a pattern now. We're going to talk in patterns of three. I'm going to talk about three chapters of my book each week, and we're going to keep going that, doing that until we get up to the 12th chapter. So, I mean, I guess there's going to be about four shows all told where I talk about my book, just kind of give an overview of it. Some would call that shameless self-promotion, but needless to say, this book, being a work of Marxist-Leninism, is not really going to get one hell of a lot of promotion in the mainstream, let's just say that. So we're going to take all the time we can. Let's just leave it at that. This book, I started it 13 years ago when I was 18, so it went through many, many different transformations. I'm just going to reiterate a few of the main concepts which I really kind of fleshed out last week in last week's show. Number one was proletarian God. What did I mean by that? And, of course, what I meant by that is, this, of course, is the title of the book itself. The proletarian God means the collective power of the working class as the creators of wealth and the builders of civilization. Because, of course, going back to the, right to the beginning, thousands of years ago, it's always been working people in whatever guise they may wear who basically built civilization, did the work of civilization, made civilization possible through their labor. It wasn't the rulers, the kings, the pharaohs, the industrialists, the feudal lords, the slave owners, or what have you. They weren't the ones who built civilization. It's the workers who built civilization. They were the ones who did the crafts. They were the ones who did the farming. They were the ones who raised the buildings, built the infrastructure, you name it. They did it all. And that's true today as it was, just as much as it was thousands of years ago. That's what I mean by proletarian God. We're really the base of civilization. Creators of civilization, the gods of civilization. That's really what the working class is. Regardless of what you think about the natural world and what created that, working class human beings created the human world, civilization. That was created by working class human beings, proletarians. Proletarian universalism was the other main concept I talked about today, but last week. And what I meant by that was how the political unity of working class people around the world in the end is going to be the only thing that can possibly defeat a capitalist system that is now globalized. The exploitation of working people is now a global phenomenon. The accumulation of wealth by a tiny minority of the world's population. Call them the 1%, call them whatever. The capitalist class, of course. Their power is global. Multinational corporations, free trade agreements, you name it. Their power is global. If working people, those people who are exploited to create the wealth that is then taken by the 1%, the capitalist class, if that's going to be countered, working people around the world have to join together across frontiers, across borders, across cultures, what have you, and unify against their common enemy, against their exploiters. And that's what I mean by proletarian universalism. Very, very crucial thing to understand. It's really about political unity, building the basis for resistance on a global scale. That's proletarian universalism. Really, what the main thing which I want to talk about today, and which these three chapters, basically chapter 4, 5, and 6 of my book are really about, is class consciousness. Class consciousness is a very important term to understand, Marxist term to understand. And basically it comes down to if a person, a working person, identifies with his class. Identifies his own interests with the interests of his class, the working class. Identifies as a working class person, is willing to fight for the working class, fight for the interests of the collective interests of the working class, what have you. And understands those interests too. Like, you know, and understands their interests, you know, and really defines themselves in opposition to the capitalist class, to those who exploit working people. And this is where I want to actually give a direct quote. Quote some of the several paragraphs, actually, of my book. This is from the introduction, actually, but it applies, really gives a good overview, I think, of really what I'm talking about here. And it goes like this. Just because a working man or woman is materially bound to oppose the interests of the capitalist does not necessarily spur him or her to actively work for the overthrow of a class system that keeps working class people in bondage. From the rise of slavery in the early years of civilization to the Industrial Revolution and the emergence of the modern world, those who support the interests of the ruling elite have understood their dependence on the labor of the masses and have worked tirelessly to keep working people divided, repressed, weak, docile, indoctrinated, in conflict with one another, and unaware of their shared class interests in opposing the overlords who keep them in chains. And this is one of the main functions of the state in class society. As Marxist scholar Albert Szymanski points out, quote, all states are primarily concerned with self-preservation, as are all dominant property classes. Power is rarely transferred from one class to another peacefully and never transferred from the propertied class to the unpropertied class in a peaceful and non-coercive manner. States, by their very nature, are mechanisms of coercion, existing primarily to enforce particular forms of socio-political conduct upon their people. Police, prisons, and the army are the very core of the state. End quote. The power elite have always sought an obedient workforce that cannot threaten the power and privilege of the ruling class, and while perfectly willing to employ the most brutal level of force to achieve this end, they have always understood that their class rule can never be cemented by force alone. The naked display of power and cruelty by the slave-owning, feudal, or capitalist state in its suppression of slave uprisings, peasant revolts, or workers' strikes has always been accompanied, concealed, and reinforced. This is the key point here, and reinforced by a constant barrage of reactionary propaganda. Through the school, the church, the media, and every conceivable avenue of mass communication open to the considerable resources of the ruling class, working people are taught from the time they are small children to see the world through the eyes of their political and economic class masters. The slave was taught to view himself as being naturally inferior to the free man. The peasant that he was bound to submit to his aristocratic overlords by the decree of God, and the proletarian that he must give himself over to the, quote, natural forces of the market. The inhabitants of the third world slums are fed rags to riches fables, while unemployed youths in Europe and North America flock to career centers for instruction on how to better sell themselves as commodities on the job market. All are taught that a better life is only possible through continued submission to their masters. Thus, the creator, working class people, the creator is taught to revere and honor the parasites who rule them and live off of their backs and off of their labor. Likewise, they are taught not to associate with working people of a different language, ethnicity, or religion. Such people are foreigners, infidels, heretics, aliens, outsiders, and godless communists, to give you only a tiny sample of the massive corpus of sectarian language that has traditionally been employed by rulers to keep working class people divided and at war with each other. Thus, the world of the working class man is purposely kept blinkered, small, ignorant, and prejudiced. Instead of blaming capitalism and capitalists for his misery, he is taught to blame Jews, Muslims, inner-city criminals, drug addicts, witches, pornography, feminists, communists, socialism, lack of faith, his own or that of others, lack of patriotism, laziness, immigrants, non-believers, and all manner of other, generally politically weak, groups of people who supposedly threaten the moral and political fabric of the nation. Our human capacity for symbolic thinking, the ability to demarcate us and them through various social cues, language, gestures, dialects, etc., objects, flags, constitutions, icons, and so on, and appearances, uniforms, clothing, hairstyles, etc., has allowed human beings to unify on an unprecedented scale, culturally, compared to our hunter-gatherer ancestors. But it has also deepened the divides between the diverse elements of humankind to sometimes catastrophic levels. Living for thousands of years isolated, in isolation from one another, hemmed in by the ice age and mountains, has ensured that human beings have diverse skin colors, languages, and cultures, convincing too many people that we are irreconcilably divided and providing a perfect tool for ruling class forces that have striven for thousands of years to divide and conquer working people, divide and conquer the working people that their exploitative class orders rely on. Thus, working men and women are instilled with false consciousness. This is what false consciousness is, kept divided, weak, and confused. Fundamentally, they do not see themselves as working people fighting against a common class enemy in the form of their capitalist exploiters. They do not see themselves as creators and builders, the foundations of civilization, and the driving force behind human progress. Instead, they see themselves as loyal citizens, believers, subjects, employees, and followers. Confined by frontiers, denominations, pay grades, and tax brackets, and firmly subordinated to their supposed betters. As Szymanski stresses, it is this level of control, extending beyond all police powers and coercive mechanisms, that is the most effective and dangerous tool in the arsenals of the ruling class. He says, quote, "The ideological state apparatuses, that is, institutions such as schools, patriotic parades, political speeches, military training, the mass media, the churches, etc., convince, invoke, and mobilize the people's support of the property classes right to property and hostility towards the enemies of the property class and the state in the form of domestic challenges and foreign interventions and wars. The state that relies primarily on police repression is weak, while that which is able to primarily rely on generating national and patriotic enthusiasm is strong." End quote. While members of the capitalist class plunder the world and its peoples, knowing no frontiers or boundaries in this era of globalization, the working class remains confined mentally, spiritually, and often physically to a specific place and time. They either do not recognize the real enemy, or their struggles are continually distracted and undermined by sectarian concerns and submissive attitudes. Working people are thus alienated from each other, which is precisely what the ruling class wants and has always wanted. You know, and I go on basically to say that working class people can only begin to exercise real control over their own lives when they come to understand the true nature of the society that uses and abuses them while continuously enriching the owners, bosses, landlords, and bankers. They have to understand who they are. They have to understand who their real enemies are. And only then can they really assert control over their own lives, their own destinies, their own futures. You know, and this is important stuff to understand. One of the things I talk about in chapter 4, which is entitled appropriately, False Gods and Class Power. One of the things I talk about in that chapter is working class survivalism, what I call working class survivalism. And what I mean by that is working people who are disempowered and exploited, who have no meaningful control over their own lives, becoming dependent on the very things that keep them down. That is religious dogma, patriarchal social and gender relations, hostility towards outsiders and foreigners, patriotic fervor and militarism, and support for imperialism and the like. Almost all of those working-class Germans who became Nazis, who were interviewed by Theodore Abel in the sociologist Theodore Abel in 1938, came from religious backgrounds, and only quite a small minority of the German working class actually supported the Nazi Party, interestingly enough. But those who did, almost all of them came from religious backgrounds and had a strong attachment to German patriotism, German nationalism, that had been drummed into their heads since the time when they were small children, basically. These were the kind of working class people who joined the Nazi movement. You know, people who really internalized this ultimately false consciousness, really internalized this loyalty to the nation, to religion, to all these concepts. You know, which in their mind set them apart from working people in other countries. So they didn't identify as proletarians or working class people. They identified as Germans, patriotic Germans. You know, as God-fearing Christians and the like. And they were willing to fight for those things and kill for those things. You know, we see the same thing, similar kinds of survivalism in working class Russians today who, in accordance with the dogma of the Russian Orthodox Church right now, view homosexuals as spiritual terrorists, quote unquote. Or working class Americans who, you know, listen to people like Rush Limbaugh and view Mexican migrant workers as, quote, criminalians. You know, we see the same kind of thing with impoverished peasants in Pakistan or South America and other places who are brutalized by landlords and, you know, tax collectors and whatnot, but who nonetheless exert total control over their wives and families, over the women in their lives. Very patriarchal arrangement. You know, basically abusing other working class people and asserting control over them because they don't control their own lives and they're beaten down. You know, and so they maintain these patriarchal traditions. Like I said before, last week when we talked about alienation, living in a society where a ruling class minority exploits a working class majority and denies that majority the control over their, you know, self-determination. Any control over their own lives, force them to sell their own labor in return for wages. They don't control the economic relations of society. They're basically, you know, seen as expendable commodities, as tools for the production of profit. In that environment, working class people will often attack one another and abuse one another and abuse themselves. You know, this is the kind of thing that happens. And, you know, we see, you know, this can result in anything from proletarians supporting fascism, proletarians supporting imperialism and military aggression abroad, attacking women, attacking immigrants, attacking all these people who are seen as outsiders or lesser than. But what is behind all that stuff, and I think that's very important to keep in mind, is, you know, whether it's racism, you know, or homophobia or sexism or all these different things, ultimately what that does, what purpose those things serve, is to keep working people divided, oppressing one another, and allowing those people who are in charge, those people who live through the exploitation of other human beings, allowing them to keep their power and their profits. And this is the kind of stuff that class society perpetuates, what capitalism perpetuates. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
In the fields, the bodies burning as the war machine keeps turning.
Your left, your left,
the bodies burning.
Left, your left.
He rises early and greets the liquid morning blue with sad eyes.
Right.
With caffeinated sighs, he hits the help wanted ads before he hits the street. In his head, there's a wicked inner city boogie-woogie backbeat banging out ghetto rhythms that were played ever since that army recruiter started turning bullshit into marmalade.
Do you want an education? A chance to travel? This is your call of duty.
Because these city streets stretch out like fingers from a concrete palm, reaching out from the heart of urban debt, gripping his throat. And every month, the grip gets tighter, 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 till there's nothing left. Right,
left.
As warm.
So he goes down to enlist. Past the picket lines, protesters with picket signs in their fists.
Do not enter induction center. Do not enter induction center.
But he shuffles past, alert but numb to their glances and glares. He says, this is my right to pick up my rifle and defend my country. Besides, I ain't got nothing left. Right,
left.
In boot camp, they break him down like a slave. They rob him of his name.
You are a soldier.
They rob him of identity.
You are a soldier.
They rob him of all forms of individuality.
You are a soldier. And when you got that enemy in sight, you hold steady. Because when the shit goes down, you better be ready. When the shit goes down.
And now he's standing on foreign ground. And he's looking down the barrel of a gun. Son of a gun. Son of a gun. It's his enemy staring him dead in the eye. His enemy says,
you got the right to die.
His enemy says,
but this is my right to pick up my rifle and defend my country.
Bang!
Point blank. And let the armies march on in ranks, putting money in the pockets of those who own banks and oil tanks. But back home, his mama gets a folded flag for thanks. And that's all she'll have left. Right. Left. Your left. Your left. Your left. Right. Left. Your left, your left, your left, right, left, your left, your left, your left, right, left.
In the fields, the bodies burning as the war machine keeps turning.
Still not seated. We waited too long to be tainted. So don't come around sniffing pounds, cause we'll pound ya, crown ya, down ya, in that mind bound ya. Into suspense, recompense, you'll be searching. But to no avail, off the rails hurting. Revolution will be loud, not televised. Systematic breakdown.
No compromise.
Dark days left in longer, I break into a canter. Realize the reason, treason, the answer. Deprecate play in the status game. A cascade into the depths of the slain. Dark are the days.
Dark are the days. Dark are the days. Dark are the days.
Jerking back and forth, working south to north and east to west, bless ocean and seas.
Marks, man.
360 degrees.
Dialectic, I abstract, act and negate. I know you never found me, knock a heaven's gate. Religion and illusion, opium of the people. And just saw busters till we're equal. And so to the news of a day dark. A child was abused, man, stabbed in the park. The union's rejected, 9%. Lady Di's rest was heaven sent. We got mass confusion, therefore mass delusion. Media, a bourgeois institution.
We'll be right back.
survive. No working 9 to 5 with no job pride. Wage is impractical, the boss and Mr. Mister. Try like a slave for your efforts is dismissed ya. Doctor, doctor, you clean up, they slop ya. Suck up to the bourgeois and then they sack ya. Power struggles run amok and we bear the brunt. But marksman punt to stumbles while grunts. We're past, leading present, the future consequential. Reform fundamental, we've all potential. West implanted, East now supplanted. Sorry you're the selfish ones that ranted. But the marks bar lit the flame in the heart. And now the West ways are dark. Dark are the days.
Dark are the days, dark are the days. Dark are the days, dark are the days. Dark are the days, dark are the days.
Dark side.
Dark are the days, dark are the days. Dark are the days, dark are the days. Dark are the days, dark are the days.
Dark side.
Days are dark. Darkness. Watch me as the spark plugs bust and disperse. Thrust cuss is the hardness. Hard to the poet, the one that edutains. Even if I blow it, marksman remains. Cock the doo doo doo, son, all this has begun. Run a little lyrical, some concoction. Little put a break on the man. He's got a system, but the system's out of hand. Overproduction of food is a crime. When there's mass starvation, a nation is dying. How can you justify stand up and decry the communist? When you stand for all this, persist in your madness and be damned. As the table turn to a clenched hand.
Dark. Dark.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Marksman with Dark of the Days. And before that, we had Guelph Spoken Word's very own Fannin Holland with his poem, his spoken word poem called War. And I think that kind of gets into some of the aspects of really what I've been talking about here on the show here tonight. But you were listening to Back in the USSR. And really the other chapters of my book kind of build on, you know, in this section, which I'm talking about, the, you know, we just talked about some of the stuff in chapter 4, when we talk about false consciousness and how working class people really get, for various reasons, end up basically supporting the powers that be as opposed to opposing them, you know, and defining their interests in accordance with the powers that be as opposed to against them. You know, this is the, you know, this is what basically Marx and Marxism has described as false consciousness. And this extends, of course, to imperialism. And this is the concern of the fifth chapter of my book, where I really get into what imperialism is, how it shaped the world. You know, maybe the single greatest driving force in the world over the last 400 years, you know, maybe more like 500 years, in terms of shaping the world that we know today. Whether that's, you know, and capitalism and imperialism really go hand in glove. You know, they can't really be separated from each other. It's really no coincidence in the emergence of capitalism and the colonization of the Americas and other parts of the world really coincided. You know, this is something I've talked about many times on the show, and it's something I've talked about. You know, I've played Michael Parenti's talks about this, so I really don't want to get so much into that, into the real, the dynamics of imperialism, because I've really gone over that many, many, many times. What I do want to go into briefly is something which really is at the core of imperialism, and really focuses on who follows imperialism. Who are the foot soldiers of imperialism? You know, who support the colonization, the colonial invasions and conquests of other countries so that their land, labor, and resources can be exploited by the ruling class, even though those, you know, these people, these soldiers or whoever else, or might be working class stiffs who don't benefit, you know, sharing the plunder basically whatsoever. You know, they're just the cannon fodder who go in there and basically have to give their lives for the conquest of these nations, for, you know, God and empire and all that kind of stuff. Why do they do it? You know, why do they do it? You know, why do working class people go to other countries, kill other working class people, destroy, kill, plunder in the name essentially the profits of the ruling class of their land, of their empire, you know, of the land that they belong to? You know, why do they do this? And really it comes down to all the things I talked about before, ideology. You know, them believing in patriotism. It can also come down to, like, you know, them needing money, or them, you know, trying to get college education, in the case of some of the people who join the American military, you know, and go to all these overseas deployments or invade or participate in the invasion of Iraq or what have you. But, you know, it's patriotism. Religion can be a motivator. All these things, you know, hatred of outsiders, you know, racism can feed into this as well. It really is all about indoctrination. The people who are running the show, the people who really benefit from things like invasion, conquest, plunder, colonization, you know, multinational corporations going into recently, how should I say, suppressed countries and making massive profits. You know, as what happened after the invasion of Iraq and the plunder of that economy. There's a lot of money to be made there. You know, and of course the people who made that possible in the U.S. State Department and the CIA and the Pentagon and, you know, the President's Office and all this sort of stuff. Those people are the big monsters, the people who really run the show. You know, the people who, you know, the capitalist class and its big, its major servants, let's just say that. They're the ones who really are the driving force. They're the ones who really benefit from the plunder and exploitation of the world and its peoples. But in order to do that, they have to have followers. They have to have people who will do what they tell them, who will serve their agenda and their interests as opposed to their own. They need working class people who will follow orders, or at least acquiesce, even if they don't actively support the ruling class agenda, at least will accept it, you know, won't offer resistance. And this is where the dynamic of big monsters and little monsters really comes from. Effectively, what, in order to maintain its control, the ruling class needs to enlist working class people as its servants, as people who do the dirty work, do the fighting and the dying, do the to basically, yeah, serve the agenda, to pay the costs, to, yeah, basically make the whole thing possible. That's what I talk about in that chapter with big monsters and little monsters. You know, that's the way I frame it. And I wish I had more time so I could really kind of get in more into the details of those things. But, you know, we have a lot to talk about. Now, probably the last thing I really want to get into is the basis of the sixth chapter, which I this is the chapter where I talk about basically two forms of hatred. Revolutionary hatred and reactionary hatred. They're very different. Reactionary hatred is based on all the things that I have been talking about for much of the show right now. It's based on ignorance and bigotry and indoctrination, and is largely directed against scapegoats and outsiders, however they are defined. It's this kind of hatred that keeps working class people divided, at war with each other, and that ultimately serves the interests of the ruling elite. Revolutionary hatred is very different, because it's based on knowledge, on actual information, and the righteous anger that comes from the awareness of real crimes. And this is the kind of hatred which working class people in a revolutionary situation, or colonized people who are fighting against colonialism or imperialism, against empire, for their own liberation. It's what these people feel when they're up against their real oppressors and they're fighting back against them. And they're aware of the crimes and the injustices that have been perpetrated, the real crimes and injustices being perpetrated against them by these powerful, exploitative, murderous, criminal forces in the world. And they are willing to fight back and, if need be, die in order to liberate themselves. It's very different from the hatred of a fascist or a Nazi, you know, who wants to exterminate members of a oppressed nationality because they're seen as like somehow poisonous or, you know, something like that. It's the exact opposite of that. Revolutionary hatred is the anger of oppressed and exploited people against the powerful forces which are beating them down and crushing them and using them. You know, it really comes down to knowledge, consciousness. Revolutionary hatred is the consciousness, comes from the consciousness of a working person who has basically woken up, who understands how the world works, who understands the fundamental injustice and inhumanity of the system which he or she is a part of. And recognizes who his or her real enemies are. You know, as a working person, who are the real enemy? Who's the real enemy? And of course, it is the capitalist class that is exploiting them. That exploits working people, that lives off of working people, that, you know, profits off of the exploitation misery of working people around the world. You know, and is willing to use lethal force to, you know, bomb, destroy, kill those people who resist that rule and that exploitation, that profit making. You know, people with that kind of consciousness who understand the world and how it really works, and who know their real enemies. Those are the people who have revolutionary hatred. And they're not sidetracked by scapegoats. You know, and they're not controlled by those bigoted, small-minded ideologies, which get propagated by, you know, seems everywhere, by the powers that be in capitalist society. You know, to keep people divided, keep working people divided and at war with each other and attacking each other. You know, working people who've woken up, who understand what's really going on, they don't fall for that. They don't buy that. They knew who their real enemy is and they will fight against them. You know, and that's where you get really revolutionary consciousness. You know, as working people understand that fundamentally they must change everything. They have to take control of society for themselves. And fundamentally they must defeat, destroy the class forces that are exploiting them. You know, and take control of society and exercise power for themselves. That's what self-determination is. And it's a struggle to get there. It always is. But you know, it's, this really is the foundation of class struggle. So much of it comes down to consciousness and awareness of who you are as a proletarian, as a working class person. Who you are, what your interests are, who your enemies are, and how to resist them. It's very important to understand. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Here comes the helicopter. Second time today, everybody scatters and hopes it goes away. How many kids they've murdered, only God can say. Stinking torture states. When I
passion, or some less humane fate.
From the coffers of big business, the black shirts march again in German towns, handing out beat downs, murdering blacks and browns, and even whites they consider inferior, consider themselves superior. Hitler resurrected, the male disrespected, printing a diary, giving a platform to a Nazi. These are dangerous times, so please wake up and understand what's up with the countries of Europe and in France. The NF gets votes and cuts throats in the port of Marseille. Is the fascist mainstay and nationalism feeds the fires of hate. We need to demonstrate and physically decimate this racist, anti-communist crew. Kill one or two and beat the rest of them blue. Or should I say red, cause there's no quarter given or asked for, cause that's how we're living. And so I gotta ask you this then, is it just evil or to do with the system that creates nation states and racial hates, decides our fates and then devastates like the destruction it caused in World War II? Now in 92, are we going back to the day of the jackboot, or will we change forever? I don't know about you, but I go hell for leather. Beat the fascists down like they go beat a Waterloo. They're as strong as we're weak. True indeed, true indeed, true.
Well, we got troubles coming from the east side. Troubles from the east side. We got troubles coming from the east side. Yeah, trouble again.
And the world is getting nervous. Oh, mankind, you got to be conscious. Yeah.
Keep on stepping.
That was Marksman with the Fascist Boom. And just before that, we had Bruce Cockburn with If I Had a Rocket Launcher. Now, Back in the USSR is going to be back after this short break. Please stay tuned.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, 250 watts of community power.
Junction Porch Fest is looking for musicians. The Junction Neighborhood Group, along with neighborhood residents, are hosting a community party on Saturday, August 13th from 1 to 5 p.m. on Meadowview Avenue between Waterloo and Galt. The idea is to have musicians perform on the covered porches of the houses along Meadowview Avenue, and they are currently seeking musicians from a wide variety of genres to play acoustic or plugged-in 30 to 45-minute sets suitable for an all-ages crowd. Deadline to apply is Monday, June 27th by the end of the day. Spots may be filled as applications come in, so please apply early. Head to the Junction Neighborhood Group's Facebook page or visit junctionng.wordpress.com to find the link to the musician application and event information. For more information, email junctionporchparty@gmail.com.
Oh, I was forgotten. Oh, I mean that I forgot.
Pour les francophones et francophiles de la région, CFRU diffuse L'Éclipse, l'émission musicale française à tous les vendredis de 9h à 10h le matin. Si vous faites partie d'une groupe ou une organisation francophone locale qui veut se faire distinguer ou bien vous voulez contribuer à notre programme, s'il vous plaît, me contactez, Sandra Doucette, par courriel francophone@cfru.ca. Soyez à l'écoute tous les vendredis de 9h à 10h pour les annonces, des événements, d'actualité et bien sûr la bonne musique française.
Hi, I'm Handel, and I volunteer at CFRU because I love working with the people here, and I also love the feeling of contributing something meaningful to the world.
CFRU is always looking for new volunteers. No experience is necessary, and all the training is free. If you would like to get involved, email volunteer@cfru.ca.
Hi, my name is Jeff, and I love CFRU because it introduces me to all kinds of music I would otherwise not have heard. And there's a vending machine down the hall.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. And like I said before, I was kind of disappointed that I really didn't get to talk so much about the chapter five of my book, where I really go into the absolute monstrosity that imperialism is. But, you know, like I usually do, I brought along somebody who is more than qualified to discuss such matters. And that, of course, is Michael Parenti. And I'm going to play a talk given by him. And I believe this talk was given in 1994. And this is a talk which he gave on globalization. And of course, the title is Globalization, the New Imperialism. You know, because he's talking about what imperialism